south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
Let's start today with an email coming long distance from Miss S. She says, "Hi, Johnny. First of all, love the show. I started listening about 4.5 years ago and never missed an episode since then. I don't know how many listeners you have in Israel, but I personally introduced your show to at least 5 people here. Since the virus outbreak here in the middle of March, we see a surge of anti-privacy laws like never before." Surprise, surprise, huh? Then she says, "The government is openly spying on our locations all the time, with the lame excuse that they're trying to warn you if you've been in the vicinity of an infected person. Anyway, Johnny, I'm looking for advice and tips on what's the best way to open a legal company in Latin America, Guatemala in particular. In this case, 100% of this particular corporation's activity will be over the net with Indian employees. So then there's a need for a Latin American legal entity with a VAT number and some local director without our names mentioned as the owners of the company. The question is it possible to do such a thing? And entirely online? Hope so. Keep spreading the good word, Johnny. Signed, Miss S in Israel." All right, thanks for that, Miss S. And I don't think you'd be surprised to know that I believe, looking back at every single one of my Expat Insider seminars, I've had Jewish attendees at every one. And with Boots on the Ground, we visit businesses owned by friends of mine who are also Jewish. And why not? As a class of people, they have the highest IQs in the world. You know, people talk about the Chinese and the Japanese having high IQs as a culture. Well, you know who beats them out, right? The Jewish people. I know some people don't like to hear that, but ain't it a bitch when the truth doesn't line up with people's prejudices, huh? Hey, if you don't believe it, look at the list of Nobel Prize winners. The Jewish people have far and away taken home more Nobel Prizes per capita than any other culture or ethnic group, even though Nobel Prizes ain't what they used to be since Obama got his. Well, as expat Eddie said, there goes the neighborhood. Hey, can I get in trouble for that? Well, you know, that's what the Swiss ambassador to Costa Rica said about me when I moved into a residential tower right next door to him. His words to the rent-a-cop in the lobby? "I can't believe it. A gringo moved in right next door to me." Yeah, there goes the neighborhood. But, you know, I continuously stick up for Nobel Prizes in science. Science Nobels are still very valid. It's those Nobel Peace and Economics Prizes that have stained the prestige of the rest of the Nobels. Let's face it, when Obama got the Nobel Peace Prize, that was the moment when real Nobel winners took their awards off the shelf, stuck them in a shoebox, and put them in the attic, right next to the Chia Pet, the Vegematic, and the Ab Cruncher. But I digress as usual. All right, so in her email, Miss S wonders if it's possible to open up an SA corporation completely online without going to Guatemala. And for that matter, it's pretty much the same for all Latin countries that offer SA corporations. The answer is yes, though I'm not sure how far most Latin countries, including Guatemala, have progressed with online virtual signatures, because, you know, you'll have to sign some documents. So on the off chance they're not accepting virtual signatures, you'll have to check with your Latin lawyer on that one. There is a possibility that you'll actually have to sign on a real piece of paper. In that case, the problem's solved by simply using a courier service to ship the documents, like UPS or FedEx. The best way, of course, to iron out all those details is to work with a trusted Latin lawyer, someone who routinely creates SA corporations as part of his job. And that, of course, is one of the benefits to coming down to my Expat Insider seminar. Our famous seminar lawyer, Jose, who's been at every single seminar for the past 10 years, not only does he do a presentation on Latin law, he hangs with us the whole time and is available for questions the entire week. And sometimes he'll even demonstrate his Latin daredevil driving skills. What I'm saying is, wait till you get a load of how Latinos drive. Puta madre. Anyway, again, the key is to have a trusted Latin lawyer work with you in setting up your SA corporation. So, Miss S, when you're ready to get started, let me know and I'll send you his details. Then you could set up a phone, Skype, or WhatsApp chat and iron out the details. Oh, and by the way, he will not charge you for the info or the advice. Unlike American and First World lawyers, Latino lawyers called abogados, quick memory aid here, it sounds like avocado, they give away tons of their time and advice, no charge. That's just the way it is here. Now, the cool thing about Latin American SA corporations, including if you set up one in Guatemala, is that they're truly anonymous if you want them to be. Your choice. And though, of course, they're legally registered with the government in the municipality that they're created in, the only names that show up there are the names of the people on the board of directors, including the director. And many gringos and expats select their Latino lawyer to be the director, giving him full, partial, or very limited power of attorney, depending on how you want to set it up. And the true owner of the corporation? Well, he or she is the person that holds the shares of that corporation. And those shares, which are physical pieces of paper, are physically held by that person or sometimes locked away in the lawyer's office. Again, your choice. Now, if you've ever seen SA Corporation shares, they look a lot like corporate shares, stock shares. And there is a space for signatures on those shares. Some people sign them, some people don't. Your choice again. The point being, the person that holds the shares is the owner of the corporation. But you have the choice of whether you want to be on the board of directors or not. If you are, then you're going to show up in the municipality and in the government records. So as you can see, there's lots of angles to this. In other words, you could be completely in the limelight, halfway in the limelight, or completely anonymous. Your lawyer, of course, can explain it in much more detail than I just did. Oh, and by the way, that's why first world governments dislike the fact that SA corporations exist. Just the two letters SA say it all. Sociedad Anónimo, anonymous society. Because you see, first world governments want to know everything. They want to keep track of all your monetary movements. And SA corporations skirt that issue. Of course, anonymous corporations don't exist up in the States. That would be illegal. That means up by you. If you own a corporation, your name's going to show up in a lot of government files. Not so here in Latin America. Down here, there's nothing illegal about a corporation being totally anonymous. Now, in her email, Ms. S. talks about obtaining a VAT number. And you know, in Europe, VAT stands for Value Added Tax. Well, in Guatemala and many other Latin countries, they call it a NIT number, N-I-T number, NIT. It's their equivalent of a social security number or tax number. Now, as a foreigner, you automatically get one when you apply for residency. And every SA corporation will have its own VAT or NIT number as soon as it comes into existence. Just like in the U.S., your social security number follows you around everywhere the rest of your life. Same thing in Latin America with your NIT number. It'll appear on your residency card, your driver's license, your phone bill, your utility bills, your car title. Yep, it follows you around everywhere. Now, just because you have a VAT or NIT number, it doesn't mean you pay or file taxes. Not unless you actually have a job and work on the books or you have a business. Just like in the States, a 10-year-old kid could have a social security number, but in no way does that require him to pay or file taxes. Not till he actually gets a job or starts a business anyway. Oh, and another thing about those NIT numbers. One of the other great things about living in Latin America is you can write off most of your personal living expenses. Here in Latin America, the tax authorities are much more liberal about write-offs than they are in the States. And as mentioned in previous shows, they don't have any ball-busting SWAT teams working for their version of the IRS. No one, I mean no one's ever going to knock on your door, much less bust it down. What I mean is no government agent's ever going to accuse you of tax evasion or even request an audit. That's just not how it works here. Unless you're a really big fish or a corporation who's been cheating with impunity. And in that case, the judge usually gets paid off. No joke, that's the way it is. So anyway, suppose you go into a Walmart or a Costco or even a McDonald's. When you're checking out, the cashier will always say, su número de NIT, your NIT number. That is, if you're a local anyway. If you're a gringo, they may not ask because they figure you're just here for a limited amount of time and you're on vacation. And if you are a tourist and hear that, you won't know what the hell they're talking about. However, when a cashier says that to a local, he'll spit it out like a robot. Just like Americans do with their social security numbers. It's a number that's burned into every Latino's memory. Now, the reason why they give it up so easily is because when the receipt is printed out, it'll then have the NIT number on it. And then at the end of the year or quarter, whenever taxes are filed, you can use that as a write-off against your income. And that's why I always say when someone says, what's the tax rate in a particular country? Let's pick Guatemala again. I'll immediately say, for a normal middle-class person, maybe 5% or less. Now, the thing is, if you look it up on the net, it'll say something like 20 to 30% income tax. And some gringos and expats will check it out, and they'll say, you're wrong, Johnny. I looked it up on the net. And my answer, well, I'll say, technically, that's true. But that 26 or whatever percent is what you pay after you've deducted certain living expenses. And that's why, if you do it in the numbers, you'll see that most people pay 5% or less. Now, the thing is, if you don't give your NIT number to the checkout lady at Starbucks, that is, if the cashier says, su NIT, por favor, and you say, consumidor final, meaning final customer, then you'll get a receipt without a NIT number on it, then it can't be written off against your taxes. And that's why almost all gringos and expats, especially tourists, will say consumidor final, then they don't have to go through the rigmarole of spitting out a number they probably don't have. They just skip it and say consumidor final. Translation, final consumer. Clear as mud, huh? Well, don't worry, your Latin lawyer will explain all that to you once you get down and apply for residency or start a business, whatever. Oh, and here's something I'm sure you didn't know. If you say consumidor final, final customer, when you get the receipt, there will be a NIT number on there. Well, it ain't yours because you don't have one or you didn't give them one. So how'd that happen and what's it all about? Well, guess what? It'll have someone else's NIT number, someone working in the store, maybe the cashier herself. She's not going to let that receipt go to waste. She'll get the write-off. Or someone else in the store, or a family member, or someone she knows will. Because remember, she's got an extra copy in the register. But once again, remember, I always recommend to try to do an internet business if you can. Why? Well, because the dirty little secret is that most gringos and expats who do have internet businesses, they never register it with the government or put it under an SA corporation or even have a VAT or a NIT number for it. That is, of course, unless the major source of their customers and clients is the local country that they're in. Turns out, you see, if most all of your clients are from outside the country, meaning most all your payments will be through PayPal or credit cards or crypto, then it's very easy to stay off the government radar and not even register the company at all. That's another angle your trusted Latin lawyer will explain to you if you happen to be in that situation. So then you might say, Johnny, but that's illegal. Well, technically it's not, except in a very few Latin countries. What I mean by that is, remember that the U.S. is one of a small handful of countries that taxes worldwide income, whereas places like Guatemala, El Salvador, Honduras, Nicaragua, and various others do not tax on outside income. And if you're running a business and most all your clients are from outside the country, in other words, an internet business, none of those payments, profits, or proceeds are taxable. So if you decide to remain off the books, don't register your company, et cetera, technically it wouldn't matter because all your income would be non-taxable anyway. Again, your Latin lawyer will run all that past you if you happen to be in that situation. Oh, and another Latin American tax issue I want to run by you. Let's talk about the taxes you pay when you buy a property or land and those yearly property tax bills. You know, we've mentioned over and over again that property tax bills are ridiculously cheap compared to U.S. property taxes. In fact, any gringo or expat who owns a house or property here in Latin America will tell you that. For example, I was just talking to a guy who owns a house in Guatemala. He says it's worth $250,000 to $300,000. His yearly property tax bill, something like $300. That's because most everything listed in municipal property registries is way below its real appraised value. And you know, the crazy thing is everyone in government knows it too. So why don't they do anything about it? Because the politicians have big spreads, very big spreads too. You think they're going to enforce fair value property taxes and ante up big taxes themselves? No way. Oh, and another thing, if you're buying a property, let's say a house from a private individual, it's completely normal here in Latin America to make a side deal through your lawyer where you list a sale price at less than half of what you really paid for it. In other words, you cut the guy two checks and you get two receipts, one registered with the government that shows less than half the real values, and that's what your property taxes are based on. However, there are some instances where you can't get away with that. For example, if you're going through a franchised real estate broker like Century 21 or REMAX, then, as you might imagine, everything's on the up and up because franchises have to remain strictly legit. And since that's how salespeople get their commission based on the total price, the whole deal will be on the up and up. By the way, real estate commissions here are from 3 to 5%. Anyway, as for franchise brokers, They're not going to go for wanting to screw around with the sales price just to save you some money on your tax bill. The broker doesn't have the power to do that, not to mention there would be way too many people involved. But note, it's a pretty common practice and done all the time when you're buying from a single individual owner. The fact is, they don't care if it comes in two checks or not, as long as they get their money. Oh, and the other way, your property gets listed at full value in the municipality, so you pay taxes on the whole thing, is if you buy into a new housing development or subdivision where the builder arranges the financing for you, and or if you buy a brand new unit in a residential tower. Because you see, contractors and developers of high rises advertise the prices of their units well before they're even completed, so it's on record what they're charging. Then let's say you're going to buy a penthouse for $200,000. Well, you can't very well register it in the municipality for half that when it's been touted for $200K in all the glossy real estate magazines. That's why, you know, if you talk to certain gringos and expats who own nice new apartments in high-rises, they'll tell you they're paying $1,000 or so a year for property taxes, and you wonder, how could that be when you've got mansions that look like they're worth $1,000,000 with property taxes only a couple of $100 a year? Well, that again is because if you're the first one into a residential tower in a brand new unit, the correct sales price and the comparables in the complex are listed down at the municipality. Whereas the guy in the big old mansion, he either built that thing from scratch himself, then listed an extremely low property value when he got the building permit, or he bought the thing from a private owner without a realtor and made a side deal to cut two checks. Now, as far as paying property taxes on something you own here in Latin America, one of the very strange things you'll find out if you happen to own property is that although you'll get a property tax bill every year, if you don't pay it, nothing happens. It just accumulates and accumulates with some fines and penalties, and eventually, if you ever sell the property, you or someone will have to pay up. But still, there have been countless cases where clueless gringos have bought a place, got title to it and everything. Then some months later, the property tax bill comes and they see they owe from 10 or 12 years back. That's why you always have to get your own personal Latin lawyer in on the deal when you're buying property. Because there's no title insurance or title companies, you'll have to have your lawyer check all that stuff. And, of course, if you buy through a realtor, they'll do the checking for you, too. But personally, I have little use for realtors myself. Now, about yearly property taxes, here's the thing. In some Latin countries, you just pay a certain percentage of the value of the house as it's registered in the municipality. And as mentioned, if you built the property or you bought it from a private seller, that number, the value in the municipality, will not reflect the real price. And that's an ideal situation when it comes to property taxes because that's the number the municipality will use. Now, some Latin countries, and I can think of a few right now, one being the Dominican Republic, they do the yearly property tax thing a bit differently. What politicians have done ostensibly to help the poor with a subsidy is that they have a cut-off price where you pay no property taxes at all. In fact, I think in the DR right now, if you buy a house that's worth $120,000 or less, you're completely exempt from yearly property tax. So anything above that number, let's say you bought a place for $200,000, that means you'd pay property taxes on $80,000 only, the first $120,000 being exempt. Sounds simple enough, right? But as you might imagine, there's a hell of a lot of hanky-panky going on. Because naturally, everyone wants their property to be worth $120,000 or less. Yep, everyone's trying to beat the system. And that's why in a country with rules like that, as far as property taxes are concerned, you're much better off buying a place from an individual owner. Because then you and your lawyer can massage the deal, if you know what I mean. Now, of course, I'd never recommend anyone break the law, but this show is called The Expat Files Living in Latin America. That means many of the things you're hearing here for the first time, you won't find in glossy magazines, YouTubes, and blogs. I'm trying to give you the whole picture and various examples as to what gringos and expats actually do when they're down here. Not necessarily what they're supposed to do. That's why when I mention things that could sound illegal, I'm not advising you to follow that line of thinking. I only bring it up to point out that it's what many gringos and expats do. Oh, and always remember this. Not everything that's illegal up in the States is illegal down here in Latin America. Take, for example, insider trading or giving away gifts like houses and boats to politicians. In the States, if they catch you, you'll be fitted for an orange jumpsuit. While down here in Latin America, not an issue. Enough said about that. By the way, how's that Plan B coming? Well, I'll tell you what. Since this COVID thing and the lockdowns, I'm getting bombarded with emails from people asking about my upcoming January 2021 Expat Insider Seminar. You can find the sign-up details at expatplanb.com. Besides that, I'm getting an unprecedented amount of email from people wanting to do a one-on-one phone call with me, too. Seems like everyone with a half a brain wants to get the hell out of Dodge. Speaking of getting the hell out of Dodge, you know I've got a lot of New York City listeners. I keep hearing about how New York City is one of the worst places to be locked down. What with no freedom of movement, ridiculous rents for tiny apartments that people are basically stuck in. And now New York City says it won't allow big events till at least October. Of course, that ban won't apply to BLM protesters and rioters, because, you know, their righteous cause trumps everything else, including the virus and social distancing, right? Oh, and get this, according to that asswipe rag, the New York Times, the richest neighborhoods in New York City saw an exodus of about 40% of their residents since the shutdown. That compared to lower and middle income neighborhoods, where around 10% of residents have left. Overall, about 5% of the New York City population, about 400,000 people, have left since the lockdown. Almost all of them high income earners. And Manhattan housing vacancies are at a 14-year high, and new leases are down 62% from this time last year. And that's not just in New York City. The trend is in all big cities in the U.S. People are getting the hell out of Dodge. It's also reported that there are record numbers of people searching for real estate outside of the current metro areas, out in the boonies. In fact, there's an 87% increase in people searching for vacancies in towns and villages with a population of less than 50,000. With thousands of families looking to escape to a sunny state like Florida or Texas, where they've got no state income tax. So again, it's the wealthy people that are moving out of the big cities. As for New York, 5% of the population, the wealthy, pay 60% of the income taxes. And most of them want out of Dodge. So the prospect of big city living up in the States anyway is not looking good, to say the least. So as far as getting out of Dodge, millionaires can do it. They're doing it now, with many, many of them already having their plan B in motion. Sure, they might have a second home out in the burbs or in Florida or Arizona. But many of them also have an escape route to Latin America. They've set themselves up already. They've got land, a house, a high-rise condo, and a nice, helpful network of expats to lean on. Though the real question might be, does the average American have the wherewithal to get the hell out of Dodge? Or more precisely, can the average American move to Latin America without being totally stressed out? Can you move and be completely happy about it? Obviously, if people were happy with their present destination, they wouldn't want to get out of Dodge. Now, obviously, in all kinds of studies, people say that if they were millionaires, they'd be happy. But we all know the old cliche, money doesn't buy happiness. But somehow everyone would like to win the lottery and give it a try. However, there is a minimum amount of money you need to earn for optimal well-being. In middle America, that number varies a bit, but they're saying it's around $70,000. In other words, if an American family of four is bringing in something like $70,000, they're not well off, but they've got no real monetary pressures. At least that's what the polls say. Now, in the UK, that monetary well-being number came in at around $45,000. Quite a difference from the $70,000 US number. But money isn't everything, and that's why they have those so-called happiness factor surveys. Though, to me, those surveys are sort of flawed. For example, you know, I don't have any kids, but when you talk to parents, they tell me that kids can be an endless source of happiness or an endless source of anguish and pain. How do you compensate or figure that into a happiness survey? If you've got a rotten kid, you're predisposed to be slightly less than happy, probably most of the time. Which reminds me of the conversations my parents had with me when I was just starting kindergarten. They gave me a set of rules before they gave permission for me to walk to school every day. Whereas these days, of course, if I had to walk 6 blocks alone to school, that would be negligent parenting, and I'd end up in a foster home for sure. The point is, I do remember those conversations, mostly with my mother. First off, she said, always say yes, sir, and no, sir, when talking to a teacher, authority figure, or the police. Number two, she said, don't interrupt adults when they're talking. She said, you'll get your chance one day when you're older to interrupt people. Number three, she said, keep your eyes open, pay attention, and don't fidget. And always remember your phone number and address. Don't get pregnant or get anyone pregnant until you're married. Don't drop out of school. Finish what you started, stick up for yourself, but don't get arrested or do anything to bring shame on your parents or family. And finally, she said, help people who deserve it. Those were the simple rules for us kids, according to my parents. Notice there was no mention of money. Because we all know money doesn't buy happiness, but we also know that poverty buys misery. Now, we mentioned the minimum amount of dough it takes in the U.S. and the U.K. to achieve a sort of financial well-being. What about Latin America? Well, you know, I ask Latinos and Latinas all the time. And you know, the monetary amount always seems to be around 10,000 bucks a year. That seems to be the magic roundabout figure for your average Latino, when in reality, most of those people are making about half of that. Though, when I ask upper middle class Latinos who are making maybe 30 grand a year, people who've made a few trips to Miami or to a resort or have kids in helicopter schools, their expectations are much higher. They say something like 40 or 50 grand a year is what they would consider the key to a nice, comfortable, stress-free life. Funny thing is, seems like everyone I ask always picks a figure that's more than what he's making. And really, most people have it all wrong. With money, you're not buying happiness or anything else. You're buying other people's time. In other words, if you have dough, you can farm out the things you don't want to do. Like in my case, washing the car, yard work, house cleaning, laundry. In fact, you could take it so far as to say you even bought the time of the artist whose picture you have on the wall. Because you see, you bought the artist's time for something you couldn't or wouldn't do. So if you don't have talent for art or don't have the skills of a plumber, you use your dough to buy their time because you couldn't or wouldn't do it. And if you don't have dough, then maybe you're stuck with blank walls or a velvet Elvis painting and leaky plumbing. Where unhappiness comes in for people with money is that they have all this free time on their hands because they can buy everyone else's time, but they don't have anything worthwhile to do with their own free time. Or they make a lot of dough but hate their jobs, though they keep plugging away because they have to maintain a certain lifestyle. The stats really prove this out. You know, before the lockdown, kids of wealthier upper middle class parents up in the States are 4 times more likely to commit suicide and 15 times more likely to attempt suicide than middle and lower class kids. By the way, how many people do you know, family, friends, whatever, who have telltale scars on their wrists? You know what I mean. I can think of a few myself, but not one has ever been a Latino or Latina. And you know, before this COVID lockdown thing is over, we'll find out soon how being shut in and restricted will affect the suicide and body mutilation stats. Man, I'll tell you, if I could bet on a growth industry, I'd definitely put my money on child psychology. I mean, really, whose family isn't dysfunctional these days? Hey, dysfunctional is the new norm, right? In fact, expat Eddie says, if your family's not dysfunctional, there's definitely something wrong. South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.